It certainly doesn't mean that we let people walk all over us or push us around. So compassion is not weak. It's not that we're always backing off, oh, this is how it is, how bad, how terrible. It's a powerful state. It's a state of great resilience. You could even say strength. Because, as I said, at the heart of compassion is the motivation to reduce suffering, not to fix suffering. And again, it's really clear that energy of fixing, of wanting it to be better so I don't have to feel it, or I don't have to feel this other person's suffering. It starts from a stance of great equanimity that says, this is how things are. There's this suffering, there's this injustice, there's this difficulty in the world. But it doesn't fix it out of aversion, but it rises up to meet it out of this great compassion. And so we sometimes have to take a stand, really be very energetic in how we relate to that suffering and what's called on us to do. I like this teaching from Sharon Salzberg. She says, I've spent quite a bit of my life as a meditation teacher and writer commending the strengths of love and compassion. So many times people have approached me and said something along the lines of, I don't know about developing greater love and compassion. Surely that will consign me to only saying yes or refusing to take a stand or letting other people be treated unjustly or being a wimp. And she says, I think these views to some extent are a cultural legacy, the degradation of love to sentimentality and compassion to the root cause of fatigue. It is sometimes difficult to view compassion and loving kindness as the strengths they are. They are viewed too often as secondary virtues at best in our competitive culture. If you can't be brave or brilliant or wonderful, then you might as well be kind. But compassion does not imply ducking our responsibilities or shirking our power. Compassion instead is a potent tool for transformation since it requires us to step outside of our conditioned response patterns. So I really love that she speaks to compassion as a great strength. And as I've said, I love this word resiliency because life is difficult. First noble truth, there is suffering. Compassion is one of the capacities, the potentials that allow us to meet that suffering and not be overwhelmed by it. So, as we've said, learning to practice and embody this, I mean, attitude doesn't seem like quite strong enough a response, this Brahmavihara of compassion, and to really recognize it as innate in us when the heart is not contracted, when we don't feel overwhelmed or needing to defend or to strike out or push away. This is how the heart naturally responds to suffering. We as meditators know when the mind quietens, what's its natural flavor? When the mind becomes still and calm, using mindfulness, our regular Vipassana mindfulness practice, you've probably noticed mindfulness has a flavor of kindness to it. I can hear James Barres, whom I'm sure you know, bring a kind, interested attention to your experience. And that's his description of mindfulness. Starts with kind, interested attention. Mindfulness has a flavor of non-judging, has a flavor of equanimity, and that flavor of non-judging or equanimity is kind, is accepting. So we can know this for ourselves, that the mind, when it's not disturbed, has this flavor of kindness. I've been using this image a lot of the water in the glass, a clear glass and clear water. But if the mind is agitated, which is like the glass, the contents of the mind will be agitated. And it'll keep, if I keep moving the glass, the water will keep moving. But if I let the glass come into stillness, eventually the water will also become clear and still. If there was impurities in the water, if there was silt in the water and I kept stirring it up, it would be cloudy. We wouldn't be able to see it. It wouldn't be pure. We wouldn't be able to drink it. One of the simplest forms of purification of water is just letting gravity, let everything settle, and the water will eventually become clear. These are great images or metaphors for us, this natural capacity of the mind. When we let it still, it's clear. You could, the Tibetans say, would say it's radiant, meaning there's a clarity to it, a brightness to it. This is consciousness knowing what's happening. And the Tibetans also say ceaselessly responsive. This is the compassion part. If something happens, the mind responds. If they're suffering, the mind, the heart responds with compassion. So we know this for ourselves. This is the natural state of the mind. When it contacts suffering, it responds with kindness and concern. When we see the suffering of others, of animals, you know that natural response of the heart. What happens, though, for many of us or in difficult situations, the mind gets involved. Our conditioned patterns of worry or fear, anxiety or judging or fixing come into play, and we start second guessing ourselves. I don't know what to do. How can I help? I don't know enough. I can't say the right thing. What if I say the wrong thing and this person gets upset? What's the right response here? And once the mind starts dwelling on this and thinking about this, everything contracts. And the true and natural compassion doesn't flow. So we have, this is why that doing it as a practice is so good. We learn to trust and rest in this natural state of mind and strengthen it, allow its resiliency to grow, allow its capacity to grow. We don't have to be perfect. We don't have to be enlightened to truly help, to be compassionate. We start right where we are, but the more we step out of the way and don't listen to those thoughts of not enoughness come through, the natural response can be there. And as I said, even if it's just to sit in silence with someone, to sit with someone without offering suggestions and telling them what they should do, it's so profound and so helpful. And so the whole progress of this practice is, as Sharon says, to step more and more outside our conditioned response patterns. And then compassion, like all of the other Brahmaviharas, becomes transcendent. Transcendent compassion. This is when it truly becomes a Brahmavihara, where there's no self, there's no me being compassionate to you. There's just this open heart responding and the action coming out of that without needing to judge or evaluate or fix. So there's no one sending or doing or even receiving compassion. There's just compassion and compassioning, and we can start to trust that movement of mind and heart. And as we said, as Mary brought in, compassion is not, as a Brahmavihara, is not a suffering state. It's a deep and profound caring. But as we practice, as we grow in that capacity, we'll move in and out of suffering. As we open to our own suffering, and as she was saying, especially if there's physical suffering in the body, it's really hard not to be impacted by that, not to have the mind move to aversion, to pushing away. But the more we become familiar with holding it with equanimity and then allowing the sincere response of compassion to arise, we become more familiar, or we strengthen that capacity. So we learn to recognize when we're in compassion and when we're in suffering, and we flow in and out. We go between those. It's understandable, of course we do. But the more we recognize what it's like to truly be compassionate, we learn it in an innate way. We start to embody it. And so this beautiful state of mind, this non-suffering state of mind of compassion is available. And that can lead to great peace and equanimity and even joy. As I said before, the other Brahmaviharas are all there. They mightn't be in the foreground, but they're in the background. The mind that is truly resilient can open to suffering without pushing away or the near or far enemies. There's a quiet joy there of confidence, of connection, of equanimity that's really, really quite profound. As that great chant, the suffusing with the divine abidings, again, some of you might know that chant, for each of the Brahmaviharas, they become abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. We abide suffusing the four quarters of the world to all as to myself. So this capacity for opening of the heart isn't one where we become weak or passive. There's enormous strength and resilience in that. Again, I love, I'm on a thread where I get reminders from the Dalai Lama, and I love always love reading them, and I save many of them. This is one he sent recently. As soon as I wake up in the morning, I remind myself that nothing exists as it appears. He's a deep teacher of emptiness. Then I think about sentient beings who want happiness but experience suffering. I generate compassion for them, determined to help as much as I can to eliminate their negative emotions. So he thought, as soon as he wakes up in the morning, he generates an experience of emptiness, and then this intention for compassion to help other beings and their negative emotions as much as possible. So, like, you know, what I love about the Buddha's teachings is they're practices. It's not that we, you know, wait for some grace to descend, though sometimes it can, but we're not waiting for it. We're deliberately turning the mind and heart again and again to these possibilities, these powerful teachings, in this case, the Brahmaviharas. In the classic sequence of practices, as I said, it traditionally starts, and I love this about all of the Brahmaviharas, they always say start where it's easy. In metta, they say start with yourself, because it should be easy to wish yourself well, wish yourself to be happy. But as we know, for many of us, that's not so easy. We've been conditioned to be judgmental or critical of ourselves. So now we say in metta, start with what we call the easy person or the easy category, self-benefactor or dear friend, find the doorway in. But it's such a skillful technique. Start where it's easy. So with compassion, we're usually told to start with a suffering person, someone we care about, but who is suffering and who we can really connect with their suffering. As I've done today, I think it's helpful to actually, again, start with self, because we can usually start or find some suffering to connect with. And as we build that capacity to know and open to our own suffering, we're more able to start with suffering for others. But now for our meditation session, I'd like us to start with this traditional category of compassion, and that is choosing a suffering person. And there's a whole, you could say, art in this practice of choosing who you will send, and I don't really like send compassion, open to with compassion. So we'll choose someone who you care about, who you know is suffering. And again, the instruction always is don't choose the most suffering person or where you really might get pulled into their suffering. We want to practice compassion. We want to practice meeting them with the tenderness, but we're not so tangled that we get pulled down. But choose who you wish to use and practice with what happens when you open to this person. Use the practices that I've already talked about of mindfulness, of being in the body and the breath, to help you breathe with this opening to compassion. It's so helpful to keep it embodied. So it's not just the mind thinking about what's happening and how difficult it is or all the challenges this other person has, but really this embodied opening and tenderness. And trust that you can open to more than you think. The other really wise teaching in all of the Brahmaviharas is if it gets too difficult, go back to where it's easy. So again, if you're doing compassion for someone and you really find yourself getting pulled into the suffering or into the wanting to fix or the pulling away because it's too difficult, go back to either compassion for yourself or back to metta, wishing yourself well, calming yourself, all back to just mindfulness, breath, body, breathing. So this permission to move in as much as you can, but if you find you're getting too rocked, too unsettled, find what's where it's easier and find it. Land yourself, ground yourself there. Again, that's such a helpful training, like I was saying before to Joan. We're building capacity as we navigate the terrain of these Brahmaviharas. We don't always have, you know, I'm not a sailor, but if you're holding a rudder, you can't just hold it rigid. You've got to respond with the rudder to the conditions and the sails, whatever they're called. You can't just set it and go straight. So you respond and know that that's actually moving in the direction you want to go. Being responsive. You're again, as I said before, learning how to be kind to yourself. So really this exploration is one of a lot of flexibility, a lot of creativity. And we just meet this moment. We don't have to fix everything. We don't have to meet every suffering that there is. We have to let in the kindness. I want to share another poem from this book. Again, so many of these touch me. I just so appreciate Matt and what he's done. This is on page 41. Ubiri, and it means the earth. She says, "How many days and nights did I wander the woods calling your name? Jiva, my daughter. Jiva, my heart." Though she's lost her daughter. "Late one night, finally exhausted, I fell to the ground. Oh, my heart," I heard a voice say, "84,000 daughters, all named Jiva, have died and been buried here in this boundless cemetery you call a world. For which of these jivas are you mourning?" Lying there on the ground, I shared my grief with those 84,000 mothers, and they shared their grief with me. Somehow I found myself healed, not of grief, but of the immeasurable loneliness that attends grief. My sisters, those of you who have known the deepest loss, as you cry out in the wilderness, just make sure you stop every so often and listen for a voice calling back. A mother lost her child, just as we did in the self-compassion, realized her shared humanity with the 84,000 mothers. And 84,000 just means a lot, immeasurable number. As they shared their grief with me, somehow I found myself healed, not of grief, but of the immeasurable loneliness that attends grief. You're not alone in this. As you cry out in the wilderness, just make sure you stop every so often to listen for a voice calling back. We're held in compassion. So what we do in this practice is both open to the tenderness for the suffering, the grief of others. We feel the shared humanity, and we feel held in that web of compassion, even as we open to the suffering of others. So it's a tender practice, but it's not a suffering practice. And we navigate that, you know, because there is suffering. It's right here, and we'll feel it. But learning how to breathe with it and discover the resiliency and the openness and the spaciousness, this is so powerful. So we'll do a meditation now with this compassion for the suffering person. So again, if you need to stand up or stretch, take a sip of water, settle yourself in. And starting as we did, and as I always like to, with just making the body comfortable and letting it come into stillness, letting your arms and legs take that familiar posture that you know is fairly comfortable for you. And inviting relaxation. Scanning through the body, using the breath to open and soften any places of tension or holding, straightening the posture, this uprightness and ease. Just like Kuan Yin, there's energy and relaxation. He's balancing awakening factors, the calming factors and the enlivening factors. We're always balancing, always responding. And then let yourself close the eyes if they're not already. And feel the breath in the body, this life-giving breath, moving in and out. And the beating of this tender heart. We're feeling all of it. The body, the posture, the limbs, settled. And the breath, the life of the body through the breath and the beating of the heart. So tender, yet alive, resilient, supporting you all these years. You feel that. And starting from that place of embodiment, this spacious awareness of breath and body, bringing into your heart this person you've chosen who's having a difficult time, someone you care about. And see what happens when you bring them in to this meditative field, into your heart. Maybe you imagine them, you have an image of them, perhaps where they are. Know where they're positioned. Maybe they're ill and they're in bed or even in hospital. Maybe just in their home. Well, you have them come sit by you, in front of you, next to you. And you just open to their presence, not getting lost in the story of what's difficult for them, but just knowing that there's difficulty suffering here. And responding to that, what's the natural response? Again, aware of the wanting to fix the story of what you could do or should do. That's not compassion. Compassion is just feeling with. How can you just be with this person in their difficulty? What would help you do that? We're finding some words or phrases. May you be free of this suffering. Or may you find peace or ease or healing around this pain or difficulty. I'm with you. I'm here for you. I care for you. breathing and offering this person a phrase or two of compassion. I care about your suffering. May you hold your suffering with compassion. May you be strong and patient with your difficulty. For holding this person, the image, the felt sense of them, connecting to what's difficult for them, opening to the response in your heart of care and concern, and expressing that with phrases. If you wish to do the more radiating kind, please do that. Will you just hold this person with tenderness? You arouse the sense of connection and compassion, and you just sit together silently. Also powerful. We'll go between some phrases and some silence. See what works for you. May you be held with great kindness and compassion as you live with this suffering. Breathing, relaxing, opening. Not telling the story. If you get lost in the story, come back to something very clear and present moment, or something easier. And seeing if at some point you can come back, connecting again with this person and their struggle and your caring for them. Using your breath to help you steady and find the place of connection. Perhaps saying the person's name on an out breath. and silent on the in-breath. And then extending the caring, the compassion on the next out-breath with a wish of words or feeling of compassion. You find you're getting lost, either in the story of this person, their struggles, your relationship, or just more spacing out, discursive thinking. Connect again, ground again in the breath and the body. Perhaps go back to a simpler practice for a while. Compassion for self or mindfulness of the body. Until you're ready to again open to this person who is suffering. Being willing to flow in the practice. Respond to what's happening. So perhaps you can feel from the qualities of this practice, just from these couple of sessions that we've done. For me, it's a very tender feeling, and there's a bitter sweetness to it, especially in the compassion for someone I care about who's suffering, because I can feel the love and the caring, but I'm particularly opening to the suffering that they're having. And that's part of the training, again, of this particular Brahma Vihara. This person could be someone where there's a lot of beauty and joy in their life, but one particular area where they're suffering, or it could be more pervasive suffering, of course. But our practices, can we stay steady and hold them with compassion, opening to the suffering as we know it, and develop this, the empathy, the caring. So we feel the love and we feel the concern. So it's a bittersweet feeling. But as we were saying before, it's not a suffering state. There's this quiet tenderness to it that, as it deepens, can actually become quite sublime, as I said before, even transcendent. This heart that's so resilient and open and flexible that it knows it can meet whatever suffering it comes in contact with. And like I also said, we underestimate what we as individuals can open to. But again, the stories of so many people opening to so much suffering and then stepping in to help. Again, you know, I've talked about the frontline workers, the essential workers, the healthcare workers. I think of people in Doctors Without Borders who deliberately go to the places of the most challenge and suffering. I mean, it's amazing. I wish I had that capacity. And I could if my life situation perhaps was different, but so much appreciation for that. So, and again, it's a practice. Some of you may be very familiar with this, either mindful self-compassion or practicing it in the way we've done at retreats. But if it's new for you, again, be very kind with yourself as you open to this practice of compassion. There's no getting it right, making it perfect, but just exploring this terrain. So we'll take a few minutes now. I know there were some people before I didn't get to who had questions or any other questions or even comments, reflections on how that was for you in opening to the suffering person. What was difficult or challenging about it? Where was there opening and connection? And again, I can see some of you, but if you raise your digital blue hand, under participants, it should give you that capacity. Anyone with any comments or questions about this practice so far? From either before, this morning, the practice of compassion for self, or what we've opened to this afternoon. And move to gallery view so I can see more of you. Oh, sorry, I did see someone. Is it Shia?
Shia.
Hi. Yes, now I'll move to speaker view so I can see you. Hold on. Yes, so you've unmuted, you can speak.
Hello. I'm appreciating your talk. The challenge for me at various times is that, as you have pointed out, there are so many areas of where people are suffering. And to somehow acknowledge that that is suffering and it's not just the way the world is. because, I mean, there's one element, well, the world has suffering, and that one can space out to the individual suffering by saying, well, that's just the way the world is. But to acknowledge, well, yes, that is the way the world is. But, so when one can admit that, I think that's what triggers compassion.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, as I've said, and I'm sure I didn't have to tell you, there's so much suffering in the world, and the Buddha said there is suffering, but sometimes that first noble truth, I think, is mistranslated as everything is suffering or the world is suffering. And I don't think that's what the Buddha meant. He said there's a great capacity for suffering if we don't understand the nature of the world. And unfortunately, most of us don't, or we lose sight of what we truly know to be true, which is everything's impermanent, we're not in control, and there's nothing solid or lasting at the core of our experience that we can manipulate to find happiness. When we forget that, then we're in suffering, just the suffering of ignorance, let alone all of the different forms of suffering that there are in the world. But Chaya, what you were pointing to is bringing in the equanimity, which I think is important, of saying this is how things are. There is suffering. But as a training and a practice, and this is where the Brahmaviharas are so helpful for us, and I alluded to this before, we recognize the breadth of the suffering, the depth of the suffering there is. But as a practice, I'm going to connect with this particular suffering and hold that with tenderness and kindness, so I train my heart and mind in its capacity to hold the greater suffering. And so just like when we're asked, especially in the metta practice, people find it difficult to choose a dear friend or choose one benefactor. And they're like, well, what about my other friends? What about my other teachers? It feels like I'm ignoring them or playing favorites. And we always say, no, it's not that. You're just choosing this one person for this time as a training for yourself. It's not about the other people and this person better than that person, but as a training for yourself. So it's the same in the compassion. Can I choose this person and highlight their suffering so I can have this immediate connection to a very specific suffering? Because sometimes when we broaden out, and we'll do that this afternoon with a more sense of the vastness of suffering, the suffering of all beings, it can get diffuse. And we don't actually feel it. It's almost can be like an escape from the suffering. So the, you know, oh, I like to send metta or compassion to all beings. Yes, yes. But it doesn't impact us. And so we pick this one person we know who's suffering so we can have this direct connection with suffering. And it's almost like we're using this person's suffering to invoke this quality of compassion. I always sometimes feel almost a little guilty in doing it, but I have to keep purifying my motivation and intention, because the deeper my capacity for compassion is, the more I'm truly able to be with them. So all of it is true. And that's how we practice with it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And Katie, I see Katie has your hand up. Again, if you unmute, and Shia, if you can mute, it'll just keep the.
I have one friend who's having a lot of suffering, and you said, don't pick the one that was so hard, pick an easier one. So I picked one that's not, his suffering isn't easier. It's just I'm not as connected to him. And I tried to do that, and I found that I kind of had this sort of, I wouldn't know how to open to the suffering he's having. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't feel like I was doing it. It was like, and I thought, well, you're training. You don't know what you're doing yet. So it's new, but I'm wondering.
But Katie, because you didn't know enough about his suffering,
I know generally about it, but I don't know specifically about every little detail.
Right. Again, you know, you have to trust your own experience and what works for you. If you want to go for the person, I should say go, if you want to open to the person where it's really challenging. We just, again, in the Brahmaviharas and this instruction that I mentioned where we start where it's relatively easy, so we get to know the Brahmavihara in its purity. If we try to say send metta to someone where we're really very intimately involved and the relationship is so complex, it's hard to disentangle and find unconditional love or unattached love in a positive sense. And so the same with the compassion. But as you say, it is a training, and the training is, can I feel empathy for this person? I don't have to know every detail of any of you here, your experience, but I can know you have suffering. And we explore that, as I said, we'll do this afternoon with the suffering for all beings. We don't have to know the details to know there's suffering here.
And I care about opening to their suffering doesn't necessarily mean feeling what they're feeling.
No, you know, compassion or empathy does mean feeling with, but it doesn't have to mean we feel exactly the same as. Because truth be told, we can't truly know what someone else is feeling. And especially if they're really, it's a physical illness, you know, you can sit beside someone that's racked with pain and you're not in pain, but you can open to the suffering that they're feeling around that. So yes, you're right. You got the point. This is a training of, What helps me move close to this? I'm not in this. I can't take their suffering away or step into it exactly as they're feeling it. But what helps me soften or become more permeable so that I'm open to their suffering? So it's just an exploration.
Thank you. That helps.
Thanks. And Jerome, we'll take this one last one. Hi. So if you unmute.
Hi. Thank you, Sally, for a wonderful day so far. I chose a friend that lives out in West Marin who I know has a difficult time with her son. In contrast to Mala and I, who have three children who are all right now happily married and doing quite well, but her son is living in a group home in Los Angeles, and he's not thriving. Mm. And so as I tune into my friend, I can feel her face. I can feel her sadness and her pain. And yet I see that most of the time she pretends it's not there because she's got a very broad and happy life, basically, outside of her son. So it was difficult for me to actually get into sending her these kind words. I could send the kind words, but I couldn't feel the response. I couldn't feel that they were hitting home. I know that I'm married to a very compassionate woman. And when our friend mother died a couple of weeks ago, she sat outside in the heat with her on our deck and really was present for her in exactly the way you were talking about. And I just felt like I could not get that close to my friend in person I could do that, but in my imagination I couldn't really get that close to how she felt. But I could keep her image in my mind during most of the time. So can you comment on how to bring that to a deeper level?
Yeah, well, as we said before, it is a practice, and there will be obstacles to it. And in your case, the obstacles were not being able to feel a real connection, or the fact that this woman actually has a life that's blessed in many ways. But just as I was saying before, that's part of the training of this, is we acknowledge that, you know, for every person, there's joys and sorrows, things that are going well and things that are more difficult. And the training is, can I support myself in staying open to what's difficult? So it's just a training, and you explore it and see, does it work for you? What helps you get closer? But the thing I wanted to check, Jerome, you said something about it, you couldn't feel it landing. And I didn't know, did you mean landing with her or landing in you?
With her.
Her. So that's the counterintuitive, or even the paradox of the compassion, is it's our own hearts that are being tenderized. As much as the caring is about this other person, we can't control what they're feeling or thinking. Obviously, we can barely, you know, have much influence over what we're feeling and thinking. So it's always coming back here. We're not looking to have it land and see any response, or you know, is it changing how they're feeling, or I hope they're getting this. It's, can my heart just stay open to this woman and this place of suffering? So we keep bringing it back here, keep bringing it back, and just being able to keep holding her image, that's powerful enough because as a concentration. But our tendency so much is to move away from when it's difficult. So, you know, trust that you had the right, you're going in the right direction, the right motivation. And we just need to stay steady and stay with it. And even as the mind comes in and says, oh, it's not working, or I don't think it's landing for her, or what about this? That's hindrance and distraction. For me, I always say the person's name when I come back. And I just found myself saying, oh, Sylvia, Sylvia. And even just saying her name and imagining her face, my friend that I was thinking of and what she's going through right now. But there was just tenderness, her name and her face. And that was more than enough to feel the compassion.
Right. Okay. I got it. Thank you.
Keep it simple.
That's lovely.
Okay. Thanks. So time now to take our lunchtime, mealtime break. We're all in that I've been teaching where people are on different time zones. So I'm always having to say different times, but I think all of us are on the same time zone. So time now to take some food and perhaps take a rest or take a walk, whatever would nourish you. And again, if you're holding this day as a day of practice, keep the devices turned off. Don't need to go and activate the mind with all of the news of the day, but just be contemplative as you prepare and take your meal, go take a rest or go for a walk, do some stretching, whatever's supporting. Maybe you're comfortable enough that you could do another practice session for self or other. As you know, in the Brahmaviharas, often we do both. We'll do self and other. So see what works for you.